Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Brett and Cliff's Flea Circus. I'm Cliff.
Hello, and I'm Dwight Angle.
Okay, nice to see you, Dwight. How are you doing?
I'm all right. Fine.
Fine, okay.
I'm fine.
You'll notice you've got a new view of my space tonight, I guess.
Yes. Uh-huh. Are you like Harry Potter, Cliff? Have you been banished to another stairs and that?
Well, I've been banished, but that's not the reason I'm here. Basically, I'm now looking outwards instead of looking sideways. So this is the door back inside behind me. The washing you can't normally see here. And you're familiar with the fake tower over here.
I'm familiar with your B-movie tower when you make it with your claymation animals.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Well, I don't need to make claymation animals tonight, Brett. Remember when we had the little birds?
Oh, then I'm back. It was a different house.
It was a different house.
Why the fuck wouldn't you?
But we're now on our third set of baby birds.
That is insane. Do you welcome the birds? Is that what it is?
I don't shoo them. If that's what you mean.
You don't shoo them. You don't shoo them away.
No. There's one baby bird over there on the chair I would normally be sitting at, looking terrified. It's our first, I'm going to say to her, it's our first day out of the nest today.
Is it?
And she was, so there was two of them before. One of them was gone. So obviously one of them has plucked up the courage to jump off the edge and see whether they could fly or not.
Well, that's good, isn't it?
Well, so anyway, I'm in a slightly different configuration. Also, I'm hunched over a bit because...
Hey, Cliff, can you hear the awful goddamn music?
What music is it? No, I can't hear.
So it was... You know, when people drive past in cars the play, just awful techno at the loudest possible volume. I'm sure that was happening while you were talking. Well, I'm glad that you couldn't hear it.
Well, some people might have preferred to hear it, but never mind.
I doubt it. I doubt it very much.
Brett, what you been up to this week?
Can I just mention the washing behind you there?
Uh-huh.
Because I like the way that... I presume it's your last, it could have been you, put a pair of leggings in a running stance behind you. Is that how they dry?
Where these here?
Yeah, yeah. Just there, the black things behind you. It might not be, it might be an optical illusion. I think it's more of an optical illusion.
Because you know what it is, Brett?
What?
Fucking idiot. It's a pillowcase.
No, there's black things behind the pillowcase. I didn't mean the pillowcase. No, you're not touching the right bit.
I can spin.
It's further behind. It's behind that. No, to the other side. Yes, them.
You're quite correct.
See? You fucking idiot.
But of course, Brett, we haven't hung them out ourselves.
Oh my god. fair enough. Did you ask us what I've been doing? Not much. I have been attacked by seagulls.
Oh, have you? Were you walking around with a pasty aloft?
No, I would say they've built a nest in a stupid place.
Okay.
So they get very protective, don't they? So they've attacked us. So that happened this week.
Was that on your rounds?
It was on my travels. Okay. I watched it on the YouTube because I'm getting quite heavily into Championship Manager.
Okay, the old one.
Of course, the old one. I wouldn't play Football Manager. No, God damn. It's too much for me. So it's all 0001. The best, well, that might be the best one. It might be 93, 94 might be the best one. But I'm playing 01.
I think that's regarded as the best, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, so while I'm playing it, I just put random films on YouTube, right? And I stumbled across a horror film from the 1980s starring Timothy Spall and Jimmy Neal. It was called Dream Demon.
I like the name. Terrible. Was it? Yeah, I think I might need to watch it though. That's a huge
beaker. The Turn into Demons. It is a huge beaker of gin. Yes.
What you got mixed with it? Alka-Seltzer.
Bit of lemon. Yeah, just to counteract the head, the cut the oncoming heady.
I'm still on the Serbian beers. You know what I realized is the reason they were so cheap when I bought them 2 months ago was that they only had 2 weeks left on their sell-by date. And I've been I've been keeping them like, I'll portion them out. And then this week I was like, oh shit.
You've been gurnamed. That's the term, isn't it?
No, but they were cheap. It was I knew the sell-by date. I just forgot to drink them within that time frame. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway.
Oh well. You been doing out?
Not much, be working a lot, obviously, as usual, but I'll tell you what I have done. I've watched Obi Kenobi.
Right, I haven't seen the last one, I don't think.
Okay, well, we'll not talk about it then.
So don't spoil that for us, please, okay?
Oh, yeah, I won't tell you that.
Don't tell us that. Don't spoil
No, but things. Mostly I've been listening to The Beach Boys because it was Brian Wilson's 80th birthday and Paul McCartney because it was also his 80th birthday.
It was indeed. And who have we picked for this wonderful podcast? I don't know if it is a one. It's probably not Harry a wonderful Nielsen. Podcast. So we haven't gone for Brian Wilson or Paul McCartney. We've gone for Harry Nielsen, Nielsen
who, of course, can't have any more birthdays.
Unfortunately not.
No, we've gone for Macca. Of course we have.
Of course we have. We've gone for the better artist in everybody's eyes. Yeah. Well, didn't I have quite a bit of a rivalry in that, Wilson and McCartney? Was it a friendly rivalry?
I think it was a friendly, I wouldn't even say it was rivalry. I think it was just friendly one-upmanship until one of them spiraled into a mad depression and craze that he's never got out of.
Yeah. Brought on by East Manager or whatever as well, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a different bit, man. That was different.
Is that a different period?
Yeah.
Yeah, well. I'm interested to find out more about that particular period. Was it the acid and stuff that did it for Mr. Wilson?
Yeah, I think it was that and the pressure at the top, Sergeant Pepper. That was it. Mm-hmm. He wanted to do something better, so he had that Heroes and Villains and Smiley Smile. Or Smile was meant to be the album that eventually Smile, came out as Smiley Smile, which was not so good. But yeah, he withdrew into himself in mad acid and pressure and depression, brought on by his abusive father and all kinds of stuff. So yeah, a sad story.
And he hated the beach.
He hated boys.
Didn't even like cars, did he? Really?
He didn't like it much apart from his bed and eating, I think, by the look of him. But we're talking about Paul McCartney. We both picked an album to talk about. You wanted to talk about 1997's Flaming Pie.
Yes.
And I picked McCartney's first solo album, simply called McCartney.
Yes, indeed. I enjoyed listening to them both. Obviously, the Flaming Pie one, I think I picked that one because that was about the time that we were getting into, music and stuff like that. It was after the anthology, wasn't it?
Later than I thought. Yeah, later. Do you want to talk about that?
Maybe 16. No, we'll talk about the McCartney one first because I think that we've got more to talk about with the McCartney one anyway.
You think so? Okay.
there's the Beatles history sort of in there, isn't there?
Yes, well, McCartney came out in 1970 before the Beatles had officially split up, and also before Let It Be came out.
Yes, and there was a bit of a wrangle there, wasn't there?
There was a bit of a wrangle, yeah. So he recorded this album at home and kind of snuck it out. Well, I'm sure Paul McCartney couldn't sneak an album out. But anyway, what happened was within the a press release kind of thing came with it. And in that, he basically said, there's no more Beatles, this is it. We're all doing our own stuff. And there had been an agreement for all of them not to say that until Let It Be came out, so they didn't harm the chances of it doing very well. And also, John Lennon had said he wanted to leave about a year earlier, or he was done with the Beatles after Let It Be had been recorded. And he felt
they didn't want him to say anything.
He had been scooped by Macca here. Yeah. He was like, well, you told me not to say anything. Now you said anything. Now you said it's happening. And I don't know why he would be particularly bothered about that, but I think it was at a time when they hated each other's guts as much as they ever did.
But it was more of the fact that, as far as the Beatles were concerned, it was him publicising his solo album, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's what they felt. And I think that's what, like, the wider... And I don't know whether the fans felt like that, but certainly the wider music press felt that way as well, didn't they?
Yeah, and because I think McCartney had been painted as the one that was problematic at this point. I think everybody thought Lennon was this avant-garde, like, you know, free spirit that you couldn't tame. So kind of he got ridiculed for all his baggism and Yoko Ono and all of the stuff he was doing with her. And bearing in mind, he had already brought out solo singles and solo albums, albeit. Not
with your right,
not rivaling the Beatles in that way, because it was experimental.
No, it was experimental stuff, wasn't it?
There was this thing about, like, this was actually seen as an attack on the Beatles product by bringing it out when it came out. It got number one in America, I think.
I think it did. Yeah, it was number one for a few weeks. I think it was. Was
it knocked off by Let It Be? I think, yeah. I think it got a number two in England.
Yeah.
It's a strange one, isn't it? Because we're always looking at this stuff. We've read the books and we've watched documentaries and that, and heard interviews now with McCartney and the other guys about that period. But it's hard to know what it must have been like at the time to think whether McCartney, anybody cared about him as solo, or whether it was a big deal or what, you know, because when you're watching that Let It Be footage of the people on the street who are like, it sounds like the Beatles up there and, like, just getting on with their day. It's a weird one, I think.
It is a strange one. I think going back to that, the other Beatles obviously felt like he was doing it for the publicity or whatever. And, you know, if you are going to announce that a band's broke up, you want to do it all together, don't you? You don't want one person coming out and just going, right, we're finished, and here's my solo album. They're obviously going to be pissed off about that, rightly so. And I think McCartney knew that they would have been pissed off about
because the
other three Beatles are making business decisions without McCartney, because McCartney won't have anything to do with Klein, will he?
But do you think McCartney was right in the long run?
Of course he was.
I think he was he was definitely feeling sorry for himself from everything that you know about this period, because he's been the one, you know, you just have to watch that Let It Be film, and he's the one trying to keep it all together. And then one of the really fascinating things about the end of that is Lennon talking about Alan Klein, what a great guy he's going to be. And McCartney's like, well, I don't know. And Glyn Johns is like, well, I would be wary of him. And obviously we know what happens after that. But what happens with the relationship is McCartney doesn't want to do it, but also he's trying to put his father-in-law and brother-in-law in charge.
Because that's giving them all the power, isn't it? If they do that,
they should have. And I mean, obviously, the third party.
There's been, like, subsequent interviews with Lennon and stuff like that on American TV where he said that Paul was probably right about him and stuff like that. You've got the sort of, I forgot what I was going to say there, Cliff. Sorry. You know, you've got his write off. You won't show up here, will you?
Seagulls.
What seagulls?
I heard the seagulls. Anyway.
Well, in the background, so you're listening to seagulls rather than me.
So Lennon said in his interviews.
Oh, I've remembered what I was going to say now. What I was saying is you don't know how much of an influence Klein had. So is he actively trying to keep them apart? Do you know what I mean? I think he probably was, wasn't he? Because probably, obviously yeah. He's got a Paul McCartney who doesn't, he knows Paul McCartney doesn't want him there. So he's then going to, you know, he's going to do his best to sort of drive a wedge between them even further, isn't
he? Yeah, you would have thought so. So the background of the album is that he disappeared to a farm in Scotland and apparently he was drunk. There's, I think it's been over-exaggerated a bit that he was an alcoholic, but I mean, if he was an alcoholic, he was an alcoholic for about 3 months and then wasn't again. So I'm not sure that was the case, but he definitely retreated into drinking a bit, kind of.
He's gone on a bender.
Feeling sorry for himself, but he went on a bender with his wife and his new baby daughter and her 8-year-old daughter in a remote farm. So probably not the best place and situation to do it. And then after a while, shook himself out of it, went back to London and recorded this album at home, apart from the one song that sounds totally different to everything else on the album.
Well, yeah, there's a couple, isn't it? I think there's the one that you like and the one that I like, which is recorded at Abbey Road, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the rest are very rough sort of, you know, with a 4-track or whatever, just recording in the house, isn't he? That's all he's doing.
It's thought of now as the first kind of lo-fi home recording. Certainly, it would have been that from a major star. You know, you had in the early 80s, Bruce Springsteen bringing out Nebraska after his big albums, and that was recorded on a 4-track, and that was something different at the time. And later on, you've got, you know, in the 90s and stuff, you've got loads of bands that made a virtue of not being properly polished and recorded
Dylan ones that you got me to listen to, they're very, very similar, aren't they, in the 70s and stuff.
Mm-hmm. So I think I get the criticism of it being half finished and half throwaway. I also think he's, well, so what is Paul McCartney? He did what he wanted. So I get it. But I mean, I think some of it is also a bit of like, well, I played these songs for the guys and they didn't want to hear them, so let's just get it on a tape.
Yeah.
And it starts with Lovely Linda, which is about 40 seconds long or a minute long or something. And it's just him.
An acoustic.
I would imagine just making it up, you know, like it's just a little la 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 la, Lovely Linda. And that's about
it. So great.
He would never. It's a lovely lyric. You know, it's very specific. It's a lovely little tune. But obviously would never have been able to record that for the Beatles.
Yeah.
So he's like, well, fuck it, I'm going to do it. And I don't know whether he thought about finishing it or whether he was like, okay, well, this is it.
Yeah, then, I mean, there's a conscious choice, isn't that? He's made a conscious choice to put all these on an album, hasn't he? Do you know what I mean? So he's obviously, he's not going to, in his head, he's not going to release something that he thinks is shit.
Yeah.
And it's not shit.
No,
do you know what I mean? It isn't. I mean, there's certain songs on there that I don't like, you know, but the main ones have come from the Beatles. Do you know what I mean? Like Teddy Boy and stuff. I don't like that song. It's disgraceful. But that's come from like the Beatles sessions. It's almost like, you know, when Noel Gallagher, he went away to Split or whatever, Noel Gallagher solo album come out, and then you listen to the album and I've heard this before. It's all Oasis demos that I've heard, type thing.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But the difference is that McCartney's just gone and going, right, I'll just record these in my house on a 4-track and I'll play all the instruments. I'll do everything, which is amazing. Do you know what I mean? The fact that he's done that. I think that the problem is that Beatles fans have gone, because he got the blame, didn't he? McCartney got the blame for breaking the band up. Probably, you know, didn't help himself by releasing that sort of release and stuff like that with the album. But the Beatles fans have gone, well, you broke the Beatles up for this album, half finished songs, and you just recording. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You were on a 4-track by yourself.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
I think it also plays into the hands of, like, if John Lennon was, or whoever, or Harrison. It's like, well, he's a megalomaniac. Yeah, look, he's just gone and recorded an album where he's played every single instrument. Like,
plays up to that. He's played to that, yeah. But the fact he can do it is amazing, though, isn't it?
Well,
the
yeah, I mean, you know how much I love Macca. Like, he's amazing.
And he is amazing.
I've never really listened to enough of his solo stuff, which is, I retweeted a thing the other day, some 5-hour mix of tunes from McCartney that was on Mixcloud. And I've been listening to that. I've pretty much listened to all of it now. And there's loads of stuff in there I've literally never heard before. Like, there's just, he hasn't got hundreds of albums, but there's still loads of McCartney stuff I've never heard. This album, and even we'll get onto it, but I hadn't really listened to Flame and Pie before. I've got this on vinyl, so I've listened to this a fair few times, only in the last couple of years. Lovely Linda's a great start. I'll run through my favourites. I'm not that bothered about, like, talking about the ones I don't like so much. It might be yours.
No, I'm not either.
I think That Would Be Something is great. I absolutely love that. That's the second song. Little bluesy, just refrain. I just think it's good. It's downbeat. I just think that sounds good. And what I would say is his voice, I think, is great on this entire album, even if he's singing nonsense lyrics.
Yeah. Well, it is. I mean, his voice is it's always amazing, isn't it? That's the thing.
And
his voice is wonderful.
There's a few instrumental things on here that I'm not that fond of. They're all right, but they're like, I don't think McCartney's a good jammer, and I don't think the Beatles are good jammers necessarily. But so there's a few, like, kind of,
there's a lot of jam and stuff on there, isn't there?
Yeah, really, but the actual songs, I love, like, Every Night is my favorite on there. I just think that the sentiment of that song, and it plays in the every night I want to get out of my head, but also every night I want to stay with you. I just think it's a lovely, lovely song, and I'd like to hear 3 minutes of it instead of a minute and a half, whatever it is.
Yeah. I mean, that was the ones that was recorded at Abbey Road. That's one of the polished ones, isn't it?
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, famously the other polished ones, Maybe I'm Amazed, which is just wonderful as well, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just class. Him? That's the thing about Maybe I'm Amazed. I never realised. I thought it was a Wing song, mate, to be honest. I mean, I've got this vinyl like you, but I thought, did Wings release it as well or something like that?
There would have been a live version by Wings on something that maybe is what gets played on VH1 and stuff when we were kids, you know? So Junk and Teddy Boy were two songs that we'd heard from Beatles anthology and stuff when we were growing up, and we both used to absolutely hate them. To be honest, Junk's grown on us a little bit. I don't like the lyrics, but I think it's, The tune is good. I like it sticks in your head. I like that.
Well, it's definitely been nicked from the MASH soundtrack. That's what I think. It's definitely been nicked. It's grown on us. I mean, initially when I heard it, I just thought it's funny, isn't it? It's a funny song. Is it meant to be serious?
No, definitely not.
I think it's meant to be funny. You know,
I think it is. I think this is the thing.
I mean, starting with motor cars, handlebars, bicycles for two. It is. I think it's going to be funny. Man.
I don't think McCartney's like that funny, though. I think that's the thing. Like,
I think he is funny.
And Teddy Boy.
I mean, the Beatles have got a, like, great sense of humour and that, don't they? They're all hiding them.
I suppose.
That's part of it. I think that's part of it.
I don't care how funny Teddy Boy's going to be. It's horrible.
it's horrible. Teddy Boy.
Piece of music.
It is.
What about, like, then this man, We Was Lonely? It's quite a nice idea, that, but he's in Wings, but it starts here. He starts singing with, like, a weird American accent and stuff, and I don't really get it.
The thing with the Man We Was Lonely, I think, you know, is this again from, it's obviously from Beatles sessions and stuff. It's almost like he's wrote this with Ringo in mind. It's almost he's singing in Ringo's voice.
Yeah.
Which is odd.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But, I mean, the album as a whole, right? I still love listening to that album.
It's just as, there's, like, those instrumentals work in the context of there's a song, there's a little instrumental, there's a song, there's a little instrumental. They work. But, you know, when you're actually digging into whether they're good songs or not, one by one.
Yeah, I mean, if you picked out an individual song and played it to somebody and went, you know, what do you think of this? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, other than, if it wasn't Paul maybe McCartney. They'd be like, yeah, whatever. Like that, that one, you would could play to anyone and go, what do you think of this song? And they go, wow, what a song?
Yeah,
And I think on the second half, like, that is by far the standout track.
it definitely is. It definitely is. I mean, like you said, every night's class as well, isn't it? And I love the London, the lovely London as well, because it's just a nice little ditty on his acoustic guitar, isn't it?
It is. Ooh, his voice is great on Ooh You, but I mean, it's that's filler. Mama Miss America is a big jam. Teddy Boy, Sing Along Junk. I don't even know what that is. I've listened to this album loads of times.
It's just so you can sing along. If you want, if you wanted to sing about motor cars and handlebars and bicycles for two. Broken hearted Jubilee.
And then Queen of Corey, the last song. What is that?
Animal noises. That's what it is.
So it's an interest. You can see why his solo career didn't take off for years, because his first couple of albums were like this.
It's like, but what's he meant to do? Do you know what I mean? You must be a Paul McCartney. You know for a fact that the Beatles are breaking up. What are you meant to do? You're meant to play the guitar and write songs, aren't you? Do you know what I mean?
I'm not knocking him for it. I'm just saying it's no surprise that it took 3 years before Band on the Run was massive.
They're still maybe I'm amazed on there and every night. So, and like I say, I've got a lot of respect for the fact that he's just gone. Do you know what I mean? Obviously depressed and he's drinking and stuff like that. And he's just gone, fuck it, I'm just going to, you know, record these songs on a four track. I'm going to do everything and I'm going to pour it out. I mean, obviously, the way that he's put it out has upset the rest of the Beatles, rightly so, I think, but it is what it is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Then we fast forward 27 years.
Yes, 27
years. You
want to
do Flame and Pie. Tell us about Flame and Pie.
Yes, I think, that, again, you know, I want to do Flame and Pie because I think it was the first Paul McCartney album that was released when I was aware of who Paul McCartney was, I think. Do you know what I mean? Obviously, I've spoken about it before that you were the person really who got us into the Beatles and stuff. I mean, you always hear the Beatles, don't you? They're always there throughout your life. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I really sort of got into them with the anthology and stuff like that. So it was the first time I could go out and buy a Paul McCartney album or get it in the library, as we probably did, and record it. But I remember seeing them on TFI Friday and he was playing Flame and Pie from this album, and it was him just on the piano and stuff, and he had loads of TV screens behind him, and obviously they were all Paul McCartney playing different instruments and things, and I thought, yeah, that's absolutely class. That it's absolutely mint.
Nicked it off Phil Collins.
Yes. But it was absolutely mint. So I remember sort of, you know, obviously, you know, getting the album from the library, recording it and stuff. But then there was a little bit later on, I must have bought it somewhere down the line. And there was a long car journey that we had, me and Lisa. And I cracked it on, just put it on. And I loved it. It was absolutely class. The wife loved it and stuff. Uh-huh. There's some cracking songs on there.
There are.
There's songs on there that I love. Well, there's one on the second half which I really like as well. You hadn't listened to it. You hadn't listened to it before, which is odd.
No,
why?
I just never, you know, I love McCartney, named after Paul McCartney. I love the Beatles. But this came out as we were getting at them. But I definitely thought it was earlier. I mean, the anthology is 94, this comes out in 97. I always thought this was like 95, like straight after the anthology, cashed in on the anthology success, rushed out a Beatles-y solo album. And I heard, you know, the single was Young Boy. Calico Sky was on some compilation I had. And I knew the name.
Which is meant, by the way, Calico Sky. It's unbelievable. Yeah, it's his guitar playing on that.
We'll get onto that. I think it's superb, yeah. But yeah, I just never got the album. I knew the cover. I knew the story behind it. I know why it's called Flame and Pie. It's all part of the Beatles folklore. But I suppose by 97, you know, I was 16, I was getting into like bands that were out then. But it doesn't. But I also remember buying Bridges to Babylon by the Stones at that point. So, you know, like, I don't know.
It's just one that's past your play, do you think? It's a bit of a strange one. That,
but then when putting it on, like, I knew it was Beatlesy. I knew we had like taken that anthology stuff and thought, fuck it, why do I try and not sound like the Beatles? I'm a Beatle, which is amazing. Yes, do that, please, Paul, because the songs are better. I don't know if it's as good as the fanfare at the time, like this massive return to form. I don't think it's all that, but there are some brilliant songs on there, and I think his voice is still great. But it's a bit of a mix because it's got Jeff Lynne's hairy hands all over half of it, and
got, well, it has, doesn't it?
It's got Jeff Steve Lynne's Miller of the Steve and Miller Steve Band. Miller is like the other half. It's so there's these kind of. It does my head in a little bit that it goes from like nice pop song, bluesy chugger, little acoustic song, heavy rocker. It's like, okay, I get it. You can do both of these things. I'm a bit, I don't like the quiet, a little acoustic ones so much. I think they are just like,
do you know?
Okay, it's other than Calico Sky, you know, it's not Blackbird, it's not Yesterday. I can see what you're trying to do. I think the bluesy ones are okay because his voice is good and there's some nice guitar playing on it, but I think they're just the McCartney songs. I think are the ones that are just like, let's write a pop song, I think are the best ones.
I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, this was sort of recorded over like a period of a couple of years and stuff like that. I think starting in like 1992 or whatever. So then as he's recording in Steve Miller's recording studio, I think he was recording it. Obviously, the anthology thing, he got sort of, you know, involved in that. So it was like put on the back burner. Although McCartney didn't particularly like the fact that it was put on the back burner. It's 27 years later, but he's still doing the same things. He's saying to the record company, well, I don't care if the Beatles anthology is coming out. I still want to release me solo albums. He's still doing the same things 27 years later. Yeah. But it does sort of wait in the end and stuff like that. But yeah, I get what you're saying. I like all most of the acoustic ones. I like the first track, the song where you were singing.
I think that's great.
Great.
I absolutely love it. It's such a, just the melody's good. And just to sing along, the songs we were singing, and it's a sing along.
Sing along. Exactly. I like The World Tonight, which is a bit of Jeff Lynne one as well. I like that one.
I think that is, it's not the biggest song on the album, but it's possibly my favorite on there. I think it's great. I also think it sounds a bit like Bob Dylan brought Time Out of Mind out this year as well, which is like his big comeback album, and that beat this to the Grammy for best album or something. And I think this sounds a little bit like the Bob Dylan on that album. He's a bit of a bit older. It's a bit swampy, the music. And obviously Jeff Lynne worked with Dylan on
Traveling Wilburys and stuff like that.
There's a couple of things that cross over there, and great. You would never normally say a McCartney song sounds like Dylan, and maybe it's not massively obvious, but I think that. And then the next one, I think, perfect for your road trip.
Perfect for my road trip. Which one, if you want to, is that what you're talking about? I can see the Steve Miller ones and stuff. I can leave them ones, I think. Do you know
what
I mean?
Is that not the one where it says talking about taking a trip all the way through?
Yeah, it is. In your Cadillac and that.
What's the lyrics for it?
Oh, I can't
remember. To make arrangements for the trip. It's strange. Like, that's the chorus. It's an odd chorus.
It is a bit odd. But the last favourite, I guess, the one that I really like, is Heaven on a Sunday. I think that's just absolutely Mint, yeah. I love that one.
I don't really like it.
Do you not?
Well, to be honest, the first time I heard it tonight on the way home, I had it on in the car. Mm-hmm. And that's the first time I've got that far in the album. And I've only heard it once. So I don't know. It's just that one lyric all the way through, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Having on a Sunday, yeah. He's talking about Cornwall and stuff like that.
Okay,
and,
it's
like heaven on a Sunday. So yeah, I like that one. What do you think about the Ringo track? Because Ringo's on there. George Martin's on this as well.
I think, when you're talking about them jamming,
you know, that is just a jam, isn't it?
Well, I got to that
that's
point,
where it's come from.
And I picked up my phone. I was at a red light, picked up my phone and saw Spotify. I was like, I must be in the like outtakes on the special edition now.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, it's track 10 on the album. I was like, fucking hell, we've got to this. Okay, it's Ringo, but like I say, I think by the time you get to this point,
it's not very good, is it?
After Flame and Pie, the song, and I know your favorite comes next, I think. So let's
Flame Pie is good as well.
Yeah. I think it's a good like
Sugar,
a good like rock number, but I don't think it's a great.
Yeah,
it's not going to be any songwriting awards.
The album, yeah, the album as a whole is like I could pick five songs off it that I really like.
Mm-hmm, I agree,
and the rest of them are I can leave them type thing. But I was in HMV this week, and the vinyl was nearly £50.
Was it the special edition with the extras on? I mean,
it might have been stupid price anyway.
no. Yeah, but we haven't talked about Young Boy, which is just a fantastic song.
Of course it is. And that's a Steve Miller one, I think. Isn't
yeah,
it?
So yeah, it is. Like, that's one of the ones you recorded in 94, I think. So, like, kind of when the anthology was out. But, he was recording this already. Yeah, Young Boy, just another lovely McCartney pop song, like.
Yeah,
just great lyrics, optimistic as you kind of paint them with that. It's great. Calico Sky, a little bit of a sequel to his like late 70s, like Mull of Kintyre kind of thing, I think. Yeah. But it's just again lovely. But there's some point to this album where you're like, I am listening to an old man's album here.
Mm-hmm.
It's not modern, it's not new. The ones that sound Beatlesy, okay. But there's some that are like, this is like, like an Eric Clapton.
It's the collaborations, I think, mostly, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, Calico Sky is where he's just him on an acoustic guitar. I think it was produced by George Martin as well, which helps.
Yep.
But it's just wonderful. There's a bit on YouTube. It's the video. It's not the real video. It's just being made up or whatever. And it's just him sitting next to a bonfire playing his acoustic guitar.
Perfect.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. So I like his guitar playing on this, and I like his voice and stuff like that. And it was a bit of a return to form for Paul McCartney, solo McCartney, because obviously the anthology had come out and stuff.
Right. You want a quiz?
Uh-huh. Paul is dead.
Do you know much about the Paul is dead farce?
Bits.
Okay. Hopefully these questions aren't too much. So basically, there's a rumor that circulated in the late 60s, early 70s, and persists somehow to this day that Paul McCartney died. Do you know how it started, Brett?
Well, I know that people assumed that Paul McCartney was killed in a car crash in 1967 on the M1 or something. Is that right?
Yeah, I don't know. Apparently, like, there's a couple of different things, so there's no like right answers about this because it's not real. So just thought we could talk about it. Apparently, an American DJ said if you play Revolution 9 backwards, you hear the words "Turn me on, dead man."
Yes. I think that was later, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's in the 70s, and that alluded to Paul McCartney being dead somehow.
Yeah, because he would have fans or journalists or whatever ring him and saying, "You're dead, aren't you?" See, I don't agree with that.
Well, one of the things
what a thing, Cliff, for we're talking about like the madness of the Beatles and all that shit, which is partly why they broke up as well, because I've heard Lennon talking about it, like them wheeling in sort of disabled kids and stuff when they were touring and all that kind of stuff. But it's just mad, isn't it, that, you know, you've wrote these songs, all you want to do is be a songwriter and stuff, and then people are saying that you're dead. Do you know what I mean? And they're insistent on the fact that it's true. It's like this angry. Beatles crazy bubble.
But they're angry that he was dead. Or they're angry that there's an imposter.
Well, they're angry that he's the replacement, and he's not the replacement, is he? He's the real one, isn't he? I mean, people also, saying that you're not the real Paul McCartney all of a sudden.
If he's the replacement, he's still pretty good.
Well, how could they get a replacement who could write equally magnificent songs?
Have you ever
have gone, the same voice, look the same?
Well, this is the thing. Have you ever gone down YouTube rabbit holes about this? Because I have a little bit, and then I had to stop.
You know what? I've watched an hour-long documentary that some loons made or whatever.
But not a documentary. They've gone like, this is Paul McCartney singing a song in 1962. This is him in 1966 or whatever. And listen to how different it is. And then they're talking about the pitch and the tone, and they're playing them side by side. But we also know that George Martin like would speed up vocals by like, I don't know, 1.2 times or something like that. So, you know, your pitch does go up if you're doing that. Like they played with the studio and stuff. And then there's something about like his eyebrow and there's a little scar in it or something. And
well, I'll tell you how sort of prevalent it is. Before I started the job that I'm doing now, maybe a year ago, I was selling gas and electricity or whatever. And there was this conspiracy theorist and stuff. Now, I said, you know, oh, I love the Beatles and stuff. Oh, yeah. You know that Paul McCartney's not the real Paul McCartney, don't you? And I was like, well, yeah, that's absolute bullshit, isn't it? Hey. It's not.
If you're a conspiracy theorist,
people believe
every conspiracy.
You've got to believe. I think so. I think that's how it works. You've just got to believe.
Well, anyway, so this is how we're onto this. So, yeah, apparently, if you play Revolution 9 backwards, a part of it says "Turn Me On, Dead Man." Somebody asked John Lennon about it. He said, I don't know. I've never listened to a record backwards before.
That's not the way it's done.
So there's clues, supposedly, to his death on other songs and other artwork. So the Strawberry Fields song, do you know that the link with Strawberry Fields, whatever the clue was meant to be there?
Strawberry Fields, I don't know that one. I don't know the that one. Cliff. What's this? Sticking up your jumper.
No, it says cranberry sauce. Apparently, people thought it said "I buried Paul."
Oh yes, of course, yeah.
But no, he says cranberry sauce, which is nonsense. Much like the theory that Paul McCartney is dead. So there's loads of stuff like that, especially with Lennon, and he started playing with it, apparently, like in Glass Onion. There were some rumours that walrus in Russian meant dead or something like that, or funeral. So when he said, I am the walrus, and in Glass Onion he said he has another clue for you all, another clue that he's dead.
Yeah.
The walrus means funeral in Russian, it doesn't. But and all of this, so there was stuff that people believed. But I guess like now, I can Google what is Russian for funeral, and I'll get an answer. Maybe then you couldn't, right? You wouldn't be able to.
Disprove it.
I mean, you could disprove that he's dead by seeing him on the telly like every week, whatever. But you know, Sergeant Pepper album cover. There's a few things on there. Do you know any of those?
The Sergeant Pepper one. What's on there? There's a wreath, isn't there?
There's a wreath in front of a grave, the stand behind a grave, tombstone thing.
So there's that one.
Yeah.
Is that it?
There's more. Like, I think if you open it out and it's got all the faces in, I think Paul McCartney's face is the back of his head.
Like the Oasis album, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why that
Noel's head's the other way.
One of the things, and I've never understood it, but I've just Googled it tonight, and there's a bit more of an explanation, that it's the first album with lyrics printed inside it.
The first ever one?
Yeah.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. Apparently so.
Yeah, that's mad,
that. So
that's,
apparently that's that means crazy. Paul McCartney's dead.
That's also a reason why he's dead.
Well, that's what I was thought. So I looked into it a bit more. I looked into it a bit more, and apparently, where the lyrics to "Within You, Without You" are, where it says "Without You" is right next to Paul's face.
Fucking hell!
He's also wearing a jacket that has a sign on, which says OPD. Which apparently stands for on pronouncement of death or something, except it doesn't, it says OPP and it's like Auckland, like public police or something. It's a police jacket that he picked up in America, so it's not, that's not even right. Yeah, it's stupid, really. Abbey Road cover, this is the last one. If you know anything about the Abbey Road cover, there's supposedly clues.
I've got some more for you if you the ones that you haven't asked, but He's got no shoes on, has he?
Don't know what that means, but yes, he's got no shoes on.
He's got no shoes on.
The outfits.
There's the letter B one, where he's got the blood red background behind him.
Oh, yeah, and everybody else hasn't. Well, there's more on the Abbey Road cover, apparently.
There's more. There's the car, isn't there? There's the Mini.
The Mini has the number plate IF28, which if he had lived, he would have been 28.
He would have been 28.
He was 27.
Yeah.
Which particularly
there's the Billy Shears thing. He's supposed to be Billy Shears, isn't he?
In Sergeant Pepper, yeah. There's apparently, as they cross the road, he's the only one whose step is opposite to the other one. So they've all got one foot in front of the other, but his is the opposite way. He's also got his cigarette in his right hand, whereas the original Paul McCartney is left-handed, of course.
He's left-handed, so of course. Everybody has a cigarette.
He would have it in his left hand. Also, the outfits, apparently, are a clue. Lennon at the front is the preacher, evangelical in white. Ringo's in a black suit to Paul Bearer, paying his respects. George.
What about the denim?
Yeah, a grave digger.
Was that the typical dress for a grave
digger? Double denim.
A grave digger.
A double
denim.
Could
say grave digger there.
Yeah. What else then? So there's the letter B thing. Anything else?
There's the letter B thing. I've had a lot of gin now. I can't remember any of the other ones. But there's a few on the White Album, isn't there? The Dead Man thing when you play backwards and stuff like that, isn't there? Which you
apparently
mentioned.
But anyway, so. That's the Paul is Dead. I've never looked into it that much because I've never really wanted to give it that much, like, kind of credence.
No.
So I haven't read I know there's books about it and all that kind of stuff. And documentaries that you've watched, but obviously I would imagine that documentary's on YouTube, isn't it?
You know it is. It's insane, isn't it? It's just mental, isn't it? But it just shows how, like, you know, how massive the Beatles are, that they have conspiracy theories attached to them and stuff. I mean, this have you heard the Stephen King one? That Stephen King killed John Lennon?
No. Is that because the guy looks a bit like Stephen King?
Pretty much. Which, I mean, Stephen King's a massive Beatles fan, loves John Lennon and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? Devastated. Would people believe this stuff? Do you know what I mean? That it was Stephen King that killed John Lennon. It's unbelievable.
What, and they framed a man that looked like Stephen King because Stephen King was too popular to put into jail.
Exactly. I mean, that's mad. I mean, obviously there's a lot about John Lennon and stuff. Like Rosemary's Babies filmed in the Dakota, which is one of the reasons that we might want to do it, so we can have a look at the Dakota see what it was like in the 70s. But there's loads of stuff like in Rosemary's Baby, like little bits of like a book or whatever, and loads of
I don't know any of that. I don't think I've ever watched that film properly, so we can do that.
It's a good film.
Okay, then let's do it. Well, before we go, we've got some music. It's quite exciting as well, isn't it, Brett?
It is quite exciting. It is quite, I mean, the good thing about it is that it kind of it fit in with last week and your selection from last week. Anybody's that's not au fait with the word, it's not quartermass. Would you think it was quartermass?
Of course you would.
It's quartermass. That's what you've got to say. If you're au fait with quartermass. Are you au fait with quartermass? This is quartermass 3, by the way.
Of course I'm not.
Of course you know. Well, quartermass.
It's an experiment.
It's a Hammer horror film, or three Hammer horror films, which are great, which are written by Nigel Neal and stuff. So
okay.
Yeah, they're wonderful. But okay. we'll have a band called Quatermass 3 on this week, don't we? Which links in last week. I'll let you explain that.
Yeah, so last week's podcast was a look into World of Twist and their album Quality Street, kind of a lost cult album from the early 90s. Members went on to do other stuff, and one of the members, Gordon King, and if you've looked at any of the World of Twist and the other bands, I followed them, there's always a neon sign saying Gordon in the above an amp, and that's this Gordon King, also in Earl Brutus, who I talked about last week, who I loved, that kind of half of World of Twist turned into, and a band called The Pre-New, and his current band is Quatermass 3, and we've got one of their songs, because Gordon got in touch. He listened to the podcast and he sent us a few songs of that band. They've been played on Mark Riley and stuff like that, and this is a song called Room at the Top. But also, for anybody who listened to World of Twist and wanted to find out a little bit more, which I would like to, because we only scratched the surface a bit, Gordon's also got a book out called When Does the Mind Bending Start, which is about World of Twist and what happened with the band and stuff like that. So
you can pre-order that. I think it comes out in July.
All right, it's not out yet. Okay, cool. Yeah. I'll probably have a look at that, because I would like to find out more. I like all these cult stories and what happens with bands. They don't always have to be Rod Stewart's autobiography, do they?
Well, who would want to read that?
Hello.
You. But yeah, I've listened to this. It's great. It's good stuff.
Really, really good. Nice psychedelic rock. It's great. So thank you, Gordon. Cheers for sending the stuff. We really appreciate it. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Hope you've enjoyed this Mac special. I was doing the peace signs there, but nobody can see other than Brett.
That's more Ringo.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up, yeah.
I think Ringo stole the peace signs from Macca, by the way. I'm sure it was a Macca thing. So anyway, it's a brilliant song. Cheers to Quatermass 3.
It's amazing.
And we'll be back with something else next time.
We will indeed. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders that we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.